Hi, I'm Joseph Feraldi. I want to thank you for joining us here at Bayside Chapel Online. Our prayer is that today's service will be a blessing to you, that it will encourage you in your journey with Jesus Christ, and it will help you to see all that God has in store for you. We would love to hear from you on how God is using this ministry to bless you, and we'd love the opportunity to pray for you. Just send us an email at amen@baysidechapel.org. Remember that you can stay in touch with us at any time. Just visit the App Store and search for our app at Bayside Chapel of NJ. Also, if God is using this ministry to bless you, we'd like to give you the opportunity to partner with us financially. Simply go online to baysidechapel.org or use the Bayside Chapel app and choose whatever option works best for you. Enjoy today's message.
Well, in June, we finished a sermon series that we called Ready. It was based on 1 Thessalonians, and we were talking about how to live in anticipation of Jesus' return. Last week, we finished a sermon series called Get Set that had to do with what to expect when Jesus returns. It was based on 2 Thessalonians. So anybody want to take a guess what the new series is called? Ready, Get Set. Actually, it's Go With God. And we haven't discovered a third letter to the Thessalonians, nothing crazy like that. In fact, this sermon series is going to take us into the book of Psalms. And the reason for that is that the Psalms speak of so many of the emotions that we have been going through in recent months. I heard somebody this week call it the emotional corona coaster. And a lot of us have been on that ride, haven't we? Because life in recent months has been strange. It's taken a toll on our mental, emotional, and spiritual health. A Washington Post article a few months ago reported that a federal emergency hotline for people in emotional distress registered a more than 1,000% increase in calls in the month of April compared to April of 2019. One doctor says COVID-19 is an international crisis which is causing heightened stress and anxiety for everyone, especially those directly affected by illness, job loss, reduction in income, or the inability to do what they would normally like to do, like attend school. According to this doctor, there's an increased sense of hopelessness and depression. He says while steps like social distancing may be critical to mitigate the spread of the disease, they will undoubtedly have consequences for mental health and well-being in both the short and long term. And so in the context of a COVID-19 pandemic, it appears likely, they say, that there will be substantial increases in anxiety and depression, substance use, loneliness, and domestic violence, and with schools closed, a very real possibility of an epidemic of child abuse. Anybody here willing to admit that this COVID business is getting on your last nerve? Yeah, just about all of us. Well, as we began to think about how to put together a sermon series appropriate for these times and for what we're dealing with these days, as a preaching team, we immediately said we've got to go to the Psalms because the psalmists often process disturbing circumstances in their lives by talking them through with God. And the perspectives they gained as they did so are helpful to us in dealing with the spiritual, mental, and emotional fallout of the COVID quarantine and other disturbing events of recent months. So in the weeks to come, we're going to go to the Psalms to help us work through in healthy ways our feelings of despair, depression, fear, sorrow, feelings of injustice, and discouragement. And today we're beginning with the Psalm that helps us deal with our despair, because as one reporter put it, COVID-19's coming mental health toll is a disease of despair. It's the despair of feeling alone and even abandoned. It's the despair that comes when there's no end in sight to this thing, and it just seems to drag on and on and on. It's the despair of knowing that we're under siege by a vicious, deadly enemy that we can't even see. And King David apparently had all of those kinds of feelings or similar kinds of feelings when he wrote Psalm 13. Now, we don't know the exact circumstances of the writing of Psalm 13. We do realize from the psalm itself that David must have been going through this ordeal, whatever it was, for quite a prolonged period of time. And he's complaining about how long it's been. And what we see in the psalm is an honest complaint, a cry for help, and an expression of trust in God. And that three-part model gives us, I think, a great way of thinking through what we're going through right now. So let me read the psalm for you, Psalm 13, and then we'll break it down into its three movements. So it's called, To the Choir Master, a Psalm of David. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord, my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemy say, I have prevailed over him, lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. I think what we learn from David's example here in Psalm 13 is a very simple lesson. And that is that when despair is setting in, it's time to talk to God. When despair is kind of taking over the house and starting to rule it, it's time to have a conversation with the Lord. And Psalm 13 models for us a way that we can do that. In fact, it's a three-part conversation that begins with this. Part one, tell God how it feels. Tell God how it feels. That's exactly what David does in the first two verses. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? I want you to see here that David isn't afraid to tell God exactly what he's feeling, how desperate he feels. He's not in a good place mentally and emotionally. Whatever the situation is that he's going through, it has taken a huge toll on him. And you can hear it in how weary he is of this ordeal. And he tells God about it. Four times over, he says, how long? How long? How long? How long? He sounds like a lot of us, just wanting to be done with this whole COVID mess. How much longer do we have to put up with this? We wonder. But you can hear in these words how desperate David feels, and his desperation is driven actually by a sense of abandonment. And so he says, how long will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? He's saying, I'm in the middle of this horrible mess, and it feels like you've gone AWOL, God, like you're nowhere to be found, like you've left me on my own, like you've forgotten your promise to look out for me, like you're hiding from me. I'm like a kid going through a tough situation, and I'm just looking to my parents' face for a little reassurance, but you've turned your face away. I can't even see your face anymore. And he's not only disturbed by God's seeming lack of interest in his troubles, but also by the turmoil going on in his own soul. He says, how long must I take counsel in my soul? I'm alone with my thoughts, and it's not a happy place to be. I have sorrow in my heart all the day. I just feel sad all the time. And to top it all off, it feels like the enemy is winning the fight. My adversary, the adversities I face, are getting the better of me. David sounds an awful lot like a lot of us as we've been going through this whole thing, rolling now into the fifth month of COVID. How long, O Lord? Feels like this has been going on forever. Feels like you've abandoned us. Feels like you've turned away from us. And the anxiety just keeps building up within me. It feels like this virus is beating us down. It's going to have us in its grip forever. I suppose it's to be expected that we would feel these kinds of things. As one medical doctor puts it in Psychiatric Times, loneliness. There is a cruel, soul-crushing paradox at work in this pandemic. At the very moment when many of us hunger most for the reassurance of company and the solace of community, we're hustled into isolation. For those without family, friends, or supportive community, the ensuing sense of loneliness, sometimes accompanied by feelings of abandonment, can be overwhelming. Although social connections via the internet are often helpful, they are no substitute for the embrace of a loved one or a friend. Anybody sick of Zoom? Our forced isolation has left many people feeling abandoned. It's hard enough feeling abandoned by the people you love, as so many have experienced, dying alone in a hospital room where their family and friends are forbidden to visit. And then there's the daily solitude of most of us in quarantine, you know, feeling forgotten by all the people you're used to seeing on a regular basis. How much harder it is when your despair is driven by a feeling that you've been abandoned by God himself. So what can you do when despair starts settling into your soul like this? Answer, talk to God. You tell him exactly how it feels. So a week before last, we had a day of prayer and planning as a staff, and during the morning prayer time, I was working through Psalm 13 and noticed that, you know what, this is a great template for kind of having a talk with God. And so I took Psalm 13 and I used it kind of as a way of recording my own reflections of how I was feeling before the Lord. And here's what I told the Lord in my journal as I wrote it down, how I was feeling that particular day. I wrote, "I'm tired, Lord. I'm tired of the way COVID has taken control of this world and changed so much, and not for the better. I'm tired of not being able to go places and do things. I'm sad that this summer is being robbed of times on the boardwalk and picnics and dinners out with friends and ball games and vacation Bible school and graduations and family reunions and so much more. I'm tired of doing church online or with only a fraction of us in attendance. I'm tired of meeting on Zoom. I'm tired of thinking about COVID. I'm tired of making constant adjustments to this situation. I'm tired of not being able to think about the future. I'm tired of not knowing what to expect or when this will end. I'm tired of wearing a mask. How long, O Lord?" Anybody identify with those feelings? And one of the things I love about the Psalms and the Psalms of David in particular is their raw honesty. David doesn't pull any punches. He tells God exactly how he feels about things, and God always seems to be okay with that. Isn't that cool? So Diane and I have often said about our oldest daughter, Emily, that she has no unspoken thoughts. That when she was a little kid, we never had to wonder where she was in the neighborhood. We just had to open the windows and we could hear her wherever she was. She was the one out there bossing everybody around and organizing the game and telling them the rules and making sure they were complying. You know, we always knew where she was. And when she was a teenager, if she was thinking it or feeling it, it was coming out of her mouth. And we were okay with that. In fact, we appreciated that because we always knew, almost always knew, exactly where she was at and what she needed from us and how we could come alongside of her. As a parent, you love it when your kids are open with you about how they feel about things. Well, the illustration kind of breaks down because, of course, God knows our thoughts before we even speak them. But there is every indication in the scripture that God, our loving Father, loves it when his children talk to him. He loves to hear from his children. He wants to know what we're thinking. He wants us to express to him what we're feeling. So get it off your chest. But instead of complaining and venting to anyone and everyone and putting it out there on Facebook for everybody to see, try talking to God about it. Instead, try talking to someone who actually can do something about your situation. When despair starts setting in, do what David did here. Tell God how it feels. Now here's part two of the conversation. Tell God what you need. Tell God how it feels, and then tell him what you need. So having told God how he really feels about his situation, David next expresses to God what he thinks he needs from God. If verses 1 and 2 were David's honest complaint, then verses 3 and 4 are his plea for help. In verse 3, he says, "Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes." Now he's really asking for two distinct things here in verse 3. First, he just wants God to pay attention. He wants to know that God is listening and that God cares. He wants some sign from God that he's hearing David's complaint and he's ready to respond. And then he prays, light up my eyes, which is kind of a strange thing to ask for. I haven't heard anybody say that since Debbie Boone back in the 70s. You know, light up my eyes or give brightness to my eyes. What's that about? Well, think about when your eyes are dull. You know, when your eyes are dull, it's a sign of what? Weariness, sadness, heaviness of heart, maybe even a sign of illness. When your eyes are dull, it's because you're weary of the adversity you're experiencing. When your eyes are dull, it signals you're losing hope, maybe even giving up on life itself. So when he asks God to give light to my eyes, he's asking God to rejuvenate him, to restore his hope, to breathe life back into his weary soul. He's essentially saying, I need you, God. I need you to step in. I need you to intervene. I need you to take over. I need you to restore my hope. I need you to save my life. And just so God understands how much is at stake here, David speaks next of the consequences. If God doesn't answer his prayer, here's what's going to happen. So if in the first couple of verses there was that repeated phrase, how long, in verses 3 and 4 you find a repeated word, lest. Three times over you find this word. You got to do this, God, lest this happens, lest that happens. And so he says, consider and answer me, O Lord my God, light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. He's pretty serious here. He's saying, Lord, if you don't come through for me here, I just might shrivel up and die. And some even suggest that David may be even hinting at the fact he's thinking about taking his own life. Lord, you've got to come through for me here, verse 4, lest my enemies say I have prevailed over him, lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken. He's saying, God, if you don't come through for me, not only might I shrivel up and die, but my enemies are going to win and they're going to gloat, and that's not going to look good for you. That's the implication of this. Because if I'm the one who is anointed by you, if I'm a man after your own heart and you don't take care of me, you know what they're going to say about you? I love how direct and bold David is in telling God what he thinks he needs. Has it occurred to you in these desperate times that you can be open and honest with God in telling him what you think you need? You know, the Apostle Paul says that everything written in the past was written to teach us so that through endurance and the encouragement of the Scriptures we might have hope. And so if David, he was talking about David in the Psalms, and he was, because that was written in the past, right? He's saying this was written to teach us, folks. This was written to show us how to handle these kinds of situations so that through endurance and the encouragement of texts like this, we can have hope. He's saying, look, we have here an example we can learn from in David, the man after God's own heart, who's going through a horrible time. He's telling God how he feels abandoned and forsaken. It's been going on a long time now. He's feeling desperate. So he tells God how it feels, and then he tells God what he needs, and we can do the same thing. So week before last, when I was having my half day of prayer, I not only in my journal told God how frustrated I was by this whole COVID mess, but then I told him, I wrote down what I thought I needed. I told him what I need. And here's what I wrote. Lord, I need to feel you near. I need to know you care. I need to know you're paying attention, that you're still in control. I need you to restore my hope. I need you to rejuvenate my spirit. I need a shot in the arm, a boost to keep me going, to keep me serving, because if you don't intervene, I may just give up, and then this stupid virus wins. When despair starts setting in, do what David did. Talk with God. Have a conversation with the Lord. Tell him how it feels. Tell him what you need. But then thirdly and finally, make sure you tell him you will trust. Make sure to tell him that you will still trust him. I find it interesting that though nothing yet has changed in David's situation, his attitude has already begun to shift in the last two verses of this little psalm. His ordeal isn't even over yet, and yet there's a distinct change in mood as you get to verses 5 and 6. The only thing that has changed so far is that David has had a conversation with the Lord. David has begun to take his focus off of his problems and to put his focus on the Lord instead. And so he confesses here his trust in God. Verse 5, he says, "But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation." God, through all of this, no matter how crummy I feel, no matter how much I think I need, I want you to know I still trust in you. I have trusted in your steadfast love. The Hebrew word there is hesed. I have trusted in your hesed. Now, that's a word that's translated in various ways in English because there just really isn't a good way to get your handle, a handle on what this really means in English. And so it gets translated steadfast love, or sometimes it gets translated loving kindness. But perhaps the best way of translating it is your covenant faithfulness. It's the kind of love that doesn't depend on my performance, but on God's commitment to me. David is saying, "God, it feels like at times you have abandoned me, but I know that's not the case because it's not who you are. You have entered into a covenant relationship with me, a relationship with me that says that you won't give up on me, that you love me with an everlasting love. You're committed to me and my well-being, and I trust you to work in this situation for my good. I'm convinced that a day is coming when you will deliver me from this trial, and I'll be sure to rejoice in your salvation when you do." You know, we can rejoice in God's salvation too, can't we? And not just in a salvation we hope is coming, but a salvation that has already been given. We rejoice in the knowledge that no matter what else happens in this crazy world, we have an anchor for our souls in the truth of the gospel that tells us that when we were helpless and couldn't do anything to change our situation, sinful as we were, God loved us so much that he sent his Son, whose life was of infinite worth, to come into this world to become a man so that he could represent humanity. And he not only lived a sinless life, lived in utter obedience to the Father, never once sinned, but he spent his life healing the sick and casting out demons and feeding the hungry and teaching the most marvelous teaching the world has ever heard. And for that, they crucified him. They nailed him to a cross. They couldn't have done it if he hadn't let them, because he had power to call 10,000 angels for his deliverance, but he didn't. He allowed himself to be nailed to that cross. Why? Because he knew it was the only way for our sin to be forgiven, by giving that life of infinite worth as the sufficient payment for all the sins that mankind would ever commit. And they put him in a cold stone tomb, thinking that it was over. But on the third day, God raised him from the dead, victor over sin and death. And now he lives and he reigns and he offers salvation and eternal life to all who will put their faith and trust in him. We can rejoice in his salvation. Isn't it amazing that this little psalm that started with such a pitiful cry of abandonment ends on such a joyful note? In just 6 verses, he makes such a dramatic change here, so that he ends in verse 6 by saying, "I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me." And so David has come full circle in his conversation with God. He's told God exactly how he feels. He has asked God for what he thinks he needs, and then he has reaffirmed his trust in the Lord. He's saying, "God, in spite of all this, I will still trust you." And now he can't help but worship. And worship is one of the best antidotes there is for despair, isn't it? He says, "I will sing to the Lord." Surely when this comes out the other side, that I come out the other side of this trial, I can celebrate your deliverance. I will sing of your salvation. But you get the idea that David is saying more than that. He's expressing a resolve to sing praise to the Lord now, even in the midst of the storm. Why? Because he has dealt bountifully with me. He's got this track record of faithfulness and generosity and graciousness toward me that I'm depending upon. He has never failed me yet, and I'm confident he never will. And so even before this trial is over, I will choose to sing his praises. And so when I was feeling a little low the week before last and kind of fed up with the grind of the last 4 months, I took a page from this little psalm, and it really helped. And I'm encouraging you to do the same thing. If you find you're kind of hitting a low ebb sometime this week, pull out Psalm 13, pull out this little outline, and use it to talk to God. I told God how I was feeling about it all. I asked God for what I thought I needed, and then in my journal, I reaffirmed my trust in him. I wrote, "Lord, all my life, I have known the covenant faithfulness of your love for me, even from the time I was a little kid. You have always been there for me. I know you will always be there for me, even when it doesn't feel like you are. I'm trusting that before long you will deliver us from the grip of this virus, and we will sing of it to your glory, full voice with masks off. But even now, in the midst of all this, with my mask still on, I will choose to sing to you, Lord, for you have always been generous and gracious to me." I'm going to sing in the middle of this storm. Louder and louder, you're going to hear my praises roar. There's nothing quite like worship to drive away despair, is there? As the worship team comes up to lead us in our closing song, I want to tell you a little story. It's by a guy named Jeremy Begbie, who once attended a worship service in a poor township in South Africa. He writes, "I was told immediately before the service that a house around the corner had just burned to the ground. A week before that, a tornado had cut through the township, ripping apart 50 homes, and 5 people had been killed. And then I was told that the very night before, a gang hounded down a 14-year-old member of the church's Sunday school and stabbed him to death." The pastor began his opening prayer. "Lord, you are the creator and sovereign. But why did the wind come like a snake and tear our roofs off? Why did a mob cut short the life of one of our own children when he had everything to live for? Over and over again, Lord, we are in the midst of death." And as he spoke, the congregation responded with a dreadful sighing and groaning. And then, once he had finished his prayer, very slowly, the whole congregation began to sing. At first quietly, then louder, they sang and they sang song after song of praise. Praise to a God who in Jesus had plunged into the very worst to give us a promise of an ending beyond all imagining. The singing gave the congregation a foretaste of the end. Christian hope isn't about looking around at the state of things now and trying to imagine where it's all going. It's not about trying to calculate the future from the present. It's about breathing the fresh air of the ending, tasting the spices, and sipping the wine of the feast to come. I will sing of your salvation. You know, a lot of us have been dealing with feelings of despair these last 4 months, and understandably so. Our isolation from one another has led to loneliness, and that loneliness has even led to feelings of abandonment, as if God himself has abandoned us. We thought that by now things would be back to normal, but the way things are going around the country, it's become clear that this thing isn't going away anytime soon, and things are not going to get back to normal anytime soon. And so our souls cry out, "How long, O Lord? How much longer do we have to put up with this? When will it end? When can I get my life back?" If you haven't felt yourself giving in to some despair over the last 4 months, you just haven't been paying attention. But if that despair has moved into your house, has begun to settle in and take over, it's time to have a talk with the Lord, taking a cue from Psalm 13. So tell him how it feels. Tell him what you need. But before you're done, be sure to tell him that you will still trust him. And then be sure to raise a hallelujah.